The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
We're just trying to get it together, trying to help the fellow man, hoping we can make it better.
It's Tuesday again, and it's Blog Talk Radio time, and this is John Fisher, and I'm coming to you from Southern California. We have a wonderful guest today, two guests. They were on here over a year ago, 2014, when they had their last project out. It was called The Martyr's Prayers, very unique musical creation. And these guys come up with definitely new types of very different things. Your last project, well, it was so unique. We went way back to the Martyrs of the Faith, and we talked a lot about that the last time you were on our show, almost a year and a half ago. This time you went back to, not quite so far back, more into our lifetime, yours and mine, Dwayne. I think we're contemporaries here, and
exactly.
the early 70s, the Jesus movement, all of that. What made you go back to that time, and what are you trying to do by going back there and connecting us with the present? How has this come about?
Michael, why don't you take that in the first instance? I'll follow up.
I sure will. Well, the inspiration for the music for Mystic Chapel originally came from a meeting that I had through Dwayne, a mutual friend who was an Eastern Orthodox priest, and he had I was kind of exploring different ways of worship way back in the 70s, and I had attended Eastern Orthodox services and Russian Orthodox, and just kind of fell in love with the liturgy and the mystic side of it. And I met with this Russian Orthodox priest, and he gave me a copy of the Liturgy of St. John Chrysostom, the Easter Vigil liturgy. And I just fell in love with it and took the little booklet that he gave me and went home and started putting it to music. And that was way back in the mid to late 1970s. And so I literally wrote some of the music, about half of the music on this album, Mystic Chapel, 35 years ago.
No kidding.
And I had recorded it with a friend. On a Thanksgiving weekend, we had a guitar shop with a recording studio in the back of it. On a Thanksgiving weekend, and my friend said, we can use this studio for the whole weekend because the guitar shop's going to be closed. And I recorded four of the songs, just kind of rough demos of them. Way back in, I think it was 1979, and I kind of had, I sat on them all these years, and really had no place to share them, and when Dwayne and I kind of reunited about 4 years ago, I said, here's a cassette tape of the Liturgy of St. John Chrysostom, that I did way back in the day. Let me know what you think. And that's kind of how it all started.
Now, the other thing about this, John, is that certain of those songs weren't just things that Michael had recorded, but they were actually things that we had used in our little Calvary Chapel Fellowship in Ohio as worship songs.
Wow.
Because we were interested in, and we were studying the fathers, we were studying ancient Christianity. And mm-hmm. so, for instance, one of the songs, Joyous Light of the Holy Glory, we used to sing that at the end of almost every Bible study for a couple different years.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
It was something that was real to us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So when Michael gave me the cassette tape, I went ahead and I made a digital file out of it, and I said, let's see if we can take this further and actually do some more with it. And so we started writing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. You know, Duane, you have always been, I guess both of you guys, just hearing you talk, you've always been very deep into the historicity of the faith. This is not a common thing. You know, I mean, Saddleback doesn't really get into this, I don't think. You know, California in general doesn't. Why do you think that is? Why has it been such a rich thing for you? Maybe you could tantalize us a little bit with that, and then why do you think it hasn't been important to our culture today?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think for me it was there was an academic side of it. I did my PhD in early church history, you know, as I went on with my life and my career. So I can say, well, you know, that's part of it for us. But for us, it was the realization, this goes back to Calvary Chapel in Ohio when I was pastor there. It was the mm-hmm. realization that we're not the first ones who have done this. We're not the first ones who have walked this Christian walk. That there are others that have come before us, and we ought to see what they said.
Mm.
And so if we were going to do that, we should go back to the beginnings of the faith.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at what happened in the first two or three centuries. And when you do that, you're presented with a very different view of the church. Now, mm-hmm. as to why this isn't done currently, I think there's a lack of curiosity. I think there is, especially among American Christians, we somehow want to believe that we have invented the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
We've done it, and we've done it for the first time, and nobody else knows this but us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you think about it, is just patently ridiculous.
Yeah,
of course.
Michael, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, for me it was way back when, you know, Jesus People Movement, as part of our community of faith, we regularly studied. We really dove into the Book of Acts, and from there. I was curious as to, well, what happened to the church then after, you know, the Book mm-hmm. of Acts? What happened? And I started, especially with Duane's encouragement and through his teaching, studying the church fathers and the early church and what they went through. And, you know, for my spirituality is is kind of mystical in a real sense. And so for me to involve myself in ancient liturgy was,
mm-hmm.
it fed my spirit because I felt a connection to, well, this is what the early church and, you know, early Christianity kind of went into, and it really nurtured me, I guess, in my faith and spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my interest. I think people have, you know, we were talking to somebody just the other day about, they said, he was a professor at a seminary, and he said, you know, they're not teaching church history very much. He said at the seminary that I'm teaching at, he said they've got me doing a token class on saints, and he said they're not really doing much with covering church history and the early church fathers, which I think is a shame, but I think that's representative of what's going on with the church today.
And I think as well, John, when we would read something like the Didache, which is right from about the year 100, well, we're reading about taking communion together. We're reading about serving the poor. We're reading about helping those who are in need, welcoming the stranger. It all made sense to us.
Mm-hmm.
It all made sense. Because that's what we were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it, it's what people like Glenn Kaiser, it's what he was trying to do with Jesus People USA. It was real to us. It wasn't just sort of an academic exercise. It was real.
We wanted to be like the early church. We wanted to be the real thing, and I guess that's what really made us really study those early documents, early church, early liturgy, the early church in general. Yeah.
You know, I think. You know, you mentioned earlier about how our culture, our church life is only interested in what's going on right now, and I really think that it's not only church. I think that's a part of our culture in general.
Mm-hmm.
We live right where we are, and you know, we're so inundated with the latest of information. And we have all these ways of getting it. The whole idea of going back, well, why would you do that? We've got all this coming at us right now. It's almost overload. Do you think that plays a part in it, too?
Well, you know, C.S. Lewis once said that the greatest prejudice is the prejudice against the past. When he wrote his introduction to a translation of Athanasius's treatise on the Incarnation, he said, our greatest prejudice is a prejudice against the past, what's gone before us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It does wonders for your own faith, doesn't it? When you find somebody passionately expressing something that you also know and feel about the Lord, only it was like 300 years ago or 400 years ago. Now, you guys have gone back way, way farther than I have. I go back to about Blaise Pascal. That's about as far as I go. But that's, you know, that's not bad. That's 1623, you know, and he carried a paper sewn into his cloak that had his own expression of his conversion, what happened the night that the Lord came to him, and he just write joy, 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 and he had these little brief little snippets of words that were happening as he was having right then that experience with the Lord. And it's unbelievable to read that and go, I know what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know what that
exactly.
is. That was 400 years ago. You know, it's the same thing. It's the same Lord. It's we need that.
And
don't
I
you think?
I think when you reach back across the centuries like that, and you realize, you know, we talk about believing in the communion of saints, you know, all believers from all time. Well, you know, it sounds weird to say, St. Augustine isn't St. Augustine. He is Augustine, who's our brother in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's our brother in Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And simply because he lived at a certain time doesn't mean he should be discounted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are lessons as well. When we were prepping the album, Mystic Chapel, there is a song that is called Death is Destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And it most likely comes from even an older form of service than that of Chrysostom. It probably comes from the Liturgy of St. James, which was originally Aramaic and Syriac. These are the languages. Aramaic was the language our Lord spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably goes right back into the second century.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off in that song, the women disciples of our Lord.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The women disciples.
The women disciples.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
Let's think about that one for a few minutes in the context of the church.
Yeah.
It tells us something. It informs us. It gives us a sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so desperately important that we regain that again, John.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we don't even call women disciples, do we, as a general rule?
No.
I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least when we're speaking of them in the New Testament, we wouldn't call, and the women disciples went to the tomb. We wouldn't say that.
Exactly.
Would we?
No. We would say the women went to the tomb. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're yeah. sort of an add-on. They're
uh-huh.
sort of extra.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Whereas within the early church, they were vital. They were
That's
central
great.
To the whole narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
I can't tell you how excited that. Well, I was, but I know Duane shares this when. We found these treasures in this ancient liturgy, way back 35 years ago, and realized that, like Duane said, these are our brothers and sisters who sang these different songs, and the liturgy that they are encapsulated in is absolutely beautiful, beautifully written, I feel like they're treasures that have not been discovered very readily by contemporary Christians at
mm-hmm.
all,
mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, and you know, St. John Chrysostom. Was a early church or a Eastern Orthodox Church father. He was known as John the Golden Mouthed because he preached so eloquently, but he also wrote liturgy in such a beautiful fashion. And I think he died in the year 407. Isn't that right, Duane?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, we're talking. You know, 5th century, the year 400 around there. I mean, this is way back. And to take these beautiful words and put them into music was, I kind of regarded it as a great privilege. And we hope that people can recognize that and recognize our past with that with this album.
Okay, can you guys talk about Mystic Chapel? Tell us where that comes from. That where does that title come from, and what is it? Or am I, you know, am I spilling the beans here? Is that something we should find out?
It's a place of encounter.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a place of encounter. And, you know, when I was writing up a press release on this, you know, I said that this is just a journey that we're offering. And that we recognize that it's just our journey. But I try to encourage people to say, find a journey that you can make your own. Because a mystic chapel isn't a place that you're going to find on a map. It's an encounter that takes place in the soul. It's where you meet the risen Christ. It's where you go through that experience of realizing that you have encountered the risen Christ.
Wow.
And that's going to be different for every person.
Sure.
And that's where we really want to take people.
And speaking of that journey, Duane, I assume you wrote the piece in the booklet about a journey. There's a journey represented. It seems to back when we're getting our beginnings going, your idea is about that and why you wanted to go back and capture some of that from those early years.
When we started Martyrs' Prayers, we had been out of the whole sort of evangelical Christian scene for 35 years, John. And when we came back to it, we were sort of like Rip Van Winkle waking up, you know, from a very long sleep. And we were astounded at what it had become. You and I are similar ages, similar backgrounds. We remember the intensity of going to Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, on a Saturday night for a concert. We remember somebody like Chuck Smith going through the Bible verse by verse, and holding 3,000 people in rapt attention for an hour, hour and a half, just going through the Bible. I know you can remember events, and I can certainly remember events like this. Talking to Glenn Kaiser recently, he can remember events like this, and talking to John Michael Talbot and Randy Stonehill, where before the concert began, before the Bible study began, you'd see somebody get up and say, I think God's doing something here, and there'd be an altar call before anything had happened, and 20 or 30 people would come forward.
Yeah.
It was just the most amazing thing. And it seems to have been, I hate to use the word cheapened, because more money is being spent now than ever before on church events, but it's been cheapened. It's I very much appreciated what I read in your blog today of what happens when you try to take the wind of the spirit, and you try to institutionalize it. You mm-hmm. try to bottle it. You try to make it corporate. And that's what it seems to me has happened. And so the person that I put into this story is someone like us. They've been through all those experiences. They have had all these various things happen to them through the course of years. And the end result is they're just done with it all. They're just done.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know where to find something that's true. They don't know where to find something that's real. And they are desperately wanting that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the person in the story, the person who sets out on a journey and they end up encountering something that even at the end they're not quite sure what it is they've encountered, whether it was a dream or whether it was reality, but they know that it has changed their life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to communicate in this.
So it's like you're reaching back from maybe a place of disillusionment and to a time when it seemed so imminent and so real, and you're trying to draw to connect the dots with that,
yeah,
and maybe bring us into an experience now,
exactly,
that was like what we had then. Am I saying that right?
Absolutely. You have gotten it absolutely right, John. We're trying to say this isn't something that we've got to stick in the past in the 70s or something that we've got to stick in the past in 105 AD. We're trying to say this is what you can experience now.
Yeah, yeah.
You can find it now. It's there. Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. It's still there. Michael?
Yeah, one of the reasons behind the album is, that's kind of underlying, is Dwayne and I have been just really sick and tired of contemporary worship, praise bands, worship events, so-called,
mm-hmm.
where people get together and they have these worship event, and it's pretty much a concert with incredible lighting and fog machines and repetitive choruses and whipping people up. We were really, really tired of that, and are tired of it. We wanted to offer
mm-hmm.
an alternative that is mm-hmm. also rooted in the early church and in rooted in ancient Christianity and liturgy
and in scripture
mm-hmm. we wanted to, like we've said in the press release, it's just kind of a love letter to the church to say, what if we still believed? What if we still had that spark kindled in us that we want to do real worship, not just a show, a performance,
mm-hmm.
but genuine,
yes.
and use the language of the church and not be ashamed of it. And we wanted to put that out there as an alternative to what's
cool.
going on in the church today, which we found, quite frankly, rather empty.
I mean, John, tell me what this says. I'm reading a trade magazine, and I read it to Michael. This is a trade magazine for sound equipment and things that you use on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Half of the magazine is devoted to churches.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the top 10 items on churches' wish lists for equipment. And the number one item that they want is they want a fog machine. I mean, a fog machine. I don't know even what to say about that, John.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think you guys are actually, you're a lot more, you probably already know this, but you're a lot more current than you know, because the kids that are coming out of the church right now that are maybe making their way into colleges, the 20s, late teens and 20s,
mm-hmm.
They're tired of it too. And,
yeah, they are. Yeah.
They will, you got to get to them with this stuff because they will love it. I'm telling you, I know they will. And
yeah.
because I think you guys, you know, actually, you know, I used to joke about, you know, so.
Hello?
Something old. Yeah. Did I lose you?
No.
Just for a second.
Yeah.
Oh.
We're still here.
You didn't hear my punch. You didn't hear my punchline?
I didn't hear the punchline.
No, we didn't hear it.
The punchline was, I'm so old, I'm hip.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, because it's true. You know, it comes back around.
Yeah.
And if you just stay long enough, you know, then the whole world's going to turn and people are going to want, they're going to be ready for you again. And here we are, you know.
Uh-huh.
I really do think, I'm reading all this stuff about the millennials and, you know, they just want a guitar. They just want silence. They want somebody, they want real work. They want real, not anything else, you know.
Yeah.
And, boy, I think it's probably, somewhat of a backlash of how far we've gone. We all get into this stuff, and we all run over here. Somebody has a success, and everybody runs over there. We got to
mm-hmm.
all do that, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
How many praise bands have you heard that you think, I really wish they had never heard a U2 album.
Yeah.
Because they're all trying to sound like
yeah.
The Edge, and they're all trying to sound like
yeah.
Bono, and they're all trying to do this whipped-up worship thing. It's not real. It doesn't work. It doesn't provide anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't provide
yeah.
sustenance.
Yeah.
And
well, you know, we were, the whole thing was to be relevant. It's like, and I think we're done with relevant. I really do. I
yeah.
love the way you used the nuns and the duns, you know, and I think I think we're done with relevant. I think we did that, you know, for about 40 years now,
mm-hmm.
and it's time to get real, you know, forget relevant, let's be real. You know,
well,
let's just be who we are and find out who the Lord is and what is this all about. And, you know, so we're getting back to the start, which is pretty cool. I
absolutely.
Don't you?
Well, let me ask you this, John. Larry Norman, well, he was certainly a flawed human being in many ways. I'm sure you saw Larry Norman in concert often.
Oh, yeah.
Through the years. Now, let's just say it. Was Larry a great guitar player? No.
No.
Most of the time, he was barely in tune.
Yeah.
Was Larry a fantastic vocalist?
No.
No. But now let me ask you this. Have you ever seen a person get up with a little classical guitar in front of thousands of people and hold them in the palm of his hand the way Larry did?
No.
It was astounding.
Yeah.
It was simple. It was basic. It was straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
It was authentic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's
yeah.
what people are looking for. They're wanting authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, with the current state of contemporary Christian music, my prediction is within about 5 years, contemporary Christian music is going to be represented by a secretary in a half office someplace in Nashville taking calls about something that's gone.
Well, you know, that's good riddance as far as I'm concerned.
I said this to a friend
yeah.
of mine who is in a Christian band, and he said, no great loss.
Yeah, no. And like we were talking earlier, Dwayne, and like Randy said, you know, what would have happened? I often thought, what would have happened if we didn't do Christian music? What would have happened if everybody who was truly talented went out in the world and tried to be something, tried to use their talent in the marketplace or wherever they could? If we really wanted to get the world's attention, that would be the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely,
then
yeah.
And you'd have to really be good. So a
yeah.
lot of them wouldn't have made it. A lot of
That's
the people
right.
who became famous Christian artists was never have made it outside because
mm-hmm.
they weren't good enough. And I'll be the first one to admit that for myself, too. And it was easier to go this route. But what would have happened if we'd done... And then if you were really talented, though, I mean, you're pretty good talented, but you're not going to have a hit song on the radio. But you could sing in church, and that would be great. And
exactly.
we could have this all... That would be have this all in the church, and all
yeah.
this talent be there. And then so we have that, and then we have these Christians out in the world affecting culture. Well, that sounds like a pretty good plan to me, and there's no Christian music there anywhere, you know? And
mm-hmm.
so maybe that's a good model. Maybe we need to grab onto that now.
Well, I think there are a few that have done it, people like Sufjan Stevens and
mm-hmm.
a few.
Mm-hmm.
But not nearly
yeah.
enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the 70s, we had the ability to affect culture, and we may have just blown it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
We may have
of
gotten
we did.
Too impressed
yeah.
with ourselves.
Yes, of course we did. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. I want to, our time's kind of getting close to being over here, and I hate that because we could obviously go forever
yeah.
here. But I love your question. I've got to tell you, I'm still completely intrigued by your question. The Martyr Project, you had a question about what would we die for? Isn't that,
yeah.
what was the question on the Martyr Project? Is that, did I get that right or close
that's
to that?
Correct. That's right.
Okay. What would you be willing to die for? And this question, though, is what if we still believed? I am just so haunted by that question, and I can't even figure out yet why it haunts me. But can you speak to that? Why did you choose that question? What if we still believed?
Well, I think it's because as we re-entered into this world, John, we found so many people who either no longer believed, believed but didn't quite know what or how they should believe, they weren't affiliated with any place, and then other people who still had faith, but they were just done with the church. They were just done with it.
They gave up.
They just gave up.
Yeah. A lot of people out there just gave up. But they still believe, but they don't know how to believe and live that out. Yeah.
So we thought, you know, the question for this is, what if we still believed? What if we actually began to act on our belief? I can tell you just straight out, what if they all came back? How many people do you think passed through Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa in the 70s and 80s?
Oh, my.
Yeah, thousands.
20,000, 30,000, tens of thousands, yeah.
John, how many people passed through the Vineyard Fellowships in the 70s and 80s?
Yeah, same deal. Maybe not quite as many, but same deal.
How many people passed through? Where are they?
Yeah, where'd they go?
Where are they? What happened to them?
Well, some of them get the catch every morning. some of them are our audience right here, and I would sure like to get a hold of a lot more of them. But seriously, when we hear from our people, a lot of them will resonate with this. Some of them are the duns, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, there are an awful lot of people hiding out. Okay, we're here in Indiana, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Long way from the West Coast. Michael goes out and plays a show. And
this is a secular show.
It was a secular show.
Actually, it wasn't in a church. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He does a Facebook post. And I can't even remember the connection, but I mentioned something about Chuck Smith. One of the musicians who was on the same bill with Michael that night comments on his Facebook post and says, I used to go and listen to Chuck Smith all the time.
Yeah, and I miss it. Yeah.
And this wasn't somebody who said anything about being a Christian to Michael or anything else. He's one of the people that we're trying to say to them, what if we still believed?
What if we still believed?
Don't give up on it. Come back.
That's great. That's great.
And that's the call.
I love it.
Don't give up on it. Come back and do something.
Cool.
Make a difference.
Ah, this is great. This is great. Okay, now what if somebody who's listening wants to get the Mystic Chapel? How do they do that?
They can go right to our website, which we had before, which is themartyrsproject.com.
Okay.
And everything is there for them to be able to order the album. They can go on Amazon to get the digital download, or onto iTunes to get the digital download. There are a whole variety of ways to get a hold of it. Or if all that fails, they should get in touch with John Fisher, who will get in touch with Dwayne and Michael.
Okay, there you go. There you go. It starts with the, T-H-E, right? The Martyrs Project. Okay,
themartyrsproject.com.
Okay, folks, there it is. And that'll get you, if you haven't even gotten, you might want to get the Martyrs Project too. Get the first one. And Martyrs Prayers, that's right.
Yeah.
And then we will get into this Mystic Chapel. I've had a chance to listen to some of it, and I love it. It's refreshing to the ear. It's different. It's simple, but it's beautiful. And some of it's haunting. I really like this. So, you guys, I can't thank you enough for being a part of my show tonight.
A pleasure.
And any
any last words to our audience out there? Anything you could just say?
I've got a word for your audience, which is to say, thank God for someone like John Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
He still believes.
Mm-hmm.
He's still doing it. He's
mm-hmm.
still making the effort. He's still going forward. And, John, I cannot tell you how much we appreciate that and how much we thank you for
that's
it.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, that's a real blessing. Well, thank you. He made my day. That's for sure.
Well, we mean
well,
it, brother.
Okay. Well, listen, until the next project, you think there'll be another one?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
We've already started writing and recording.
Excellent.
We've already gotten four new songs in the box.
Okay. Well, Michael, thank you for getting in touch with me.
Yeah.
And do it again next time. The timing was great today, so I appreciate it. And and Lord bless you guys.
Thank you.
All
right.
So much.
God bless, John.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go, folks. I apologize for the funny beginning, but here it is.
To The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
There are lots of things you can spend your tax refund on, but one thing you don't have to spend it on? A new smartphone. Switch to Metro PCS now and get not one, but two free 4G LTE smartphones for brands like Samsung and LG. Plus, you're on T-Mobile's blazing fast nationwide 4G LTE network. Hurry, switch to Metro PCS and get two free smartphones after instant rebate. One heck of a deal, only at Metro PCS. Limited time offer. Sales tax not included in phone price. Coverage and services not available everywhere. See store for details and terms and conditions.